Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellefson with the Digital Education Podcast, where I get the opportunity to have conversations with interesting people, people I get to meet, people I get to know, leaders in the education world, innovators, but just people who care about doing good things. And today I'm with Ryan Hope, who's founder of Overgrad, started with his friend Kevin Hoffman in 2013. And before that, Ryan had taught for 2 years in St. Louis. And Ryan, I'm just going to dive right in and ask the first question. Because my friend Bill Latham of Meteor Education, he's said to me before on one of these podcasts, but I've heard him say it to groups, that often innovation comes out of frustration. And on the Overgrad website, it kind of states that, you know, you worked for 2 years in St. Louis, you're teaching, and there was a frustration of what you saw. And what was the change point, or what were some of the things that got you thinking and pushing you and Kevin to start something like Overgrad?
Yeah. So first, let me just say thank you for having me here today, Eric. Excited to be on the podcast. And my personal experience, I couldn't agree more with that quote. So walk into classroom. So I did an alternative teaching program called Teach for America. And so I had no context or no background in education. Actually, if you would have asked me in undergrad, what do you want to do in life? My answer would have been, the only one thing I know for certainty is that I don't want to be a teacher. And so it was ironic. That was my first sort of career choice that I decided to go into. So I walk into class, super naive. I say that to provide some context. And first question I asked my juniors and seniors was, who wants to go to college? And I'm very aware that I'm in St. Louis public schools, low overall district academic achievement, a lot of issues going on, but I was coming in with as positive mindset as I could. And I was stunned still that 90% of my students put their hands in the air. And I'm like, that's awesome. But like, we always talk about, you know, SMART goals. So let's see if they're specific and measurable. And so I go, what schools do you want to go to? And most of my kids could say like institutions that were nearby. So they would say Mizzou or SLU or Wash U. And that was super exciting for me. I was like, my kids got it. Like, I don't know what people were trying to tell me before. Like, we're good to go. So I wanted to get a benchmark of where they were at. Took a practice ACT. Average ACT for my students was a 15, and average GPA was a 2.5. And if you just fill in bubbles on the ACT, you're supposed to get a 12. And so that was like the reality sort of set in at that point in time. And after talking with my students, I realized that my school had done a good job of instilling, if you dream it, you could do it, but it wasn't grounded in any sense of reality. And my students were just under the assumption that if I want to go to college, I'm going to be able to go and I'm going to be successful. And that was not the truth. And so I looked at the data, and the data told me that while 90% of my kids told me they wanted to go to college, only 8% from St. Louis public schools would go on to graduate. And so we worked as hard as we could. Like, we knew the numbers, we knew everything. We got the ACTs up to an 18 after a quarter, but still a far cry from where they needed to be. And so the vast majority of my students, ones that wanted to go to Wash U or wherever, ended up having to go to community college because guidance counselors and school counselors were telling them, which was the truth, that you're underprepared for these schools and you won't be accepted. So go get some credit, build up remedial credit, and then reapply. But none of my students envisioned themselves there. And when things got difficult and they realized they weren't earning credit for the classes that they were taking, most of them dropped out. And so I saw that like 8% sort of expectation kind of come to reality. I didn't do anything about it right away. So as you mentioned, I taught for 2 years. In between that, I went and worked as a consultant because I was an engineer. And I thought, hey, let's just see what it's like in corporate America. The other thing I would have told you that I would never thought I would have been was an entrepreneur, because I had no entrepreneurs around me. I didn't really know it as a viable career path. But I just kept reflecting on these like issues that I saw in the classroom and was learning more and more about education, kind of like what was there. And what solutions were out there to solve it. And I just didn't think that there were great options for my students that existed. And so it lasted about 13 months, well, I'd say about 10 months, and then wanted to quit, convinced my then fiance, now wife, to let me do it, and convinced Kevin to come along with me, and we've been at it ever since. So, yeah.
So as an entrepreneur and as an innovator in this space, you know, I found it interesting on your website that, you know, you state, and even the quote is, Overgrad has grown from a solution just for schools to a platform that unites a student's support network. So, you know, you kind of come to these realizations that, number one, you know, you go into teaching and then you learn a ton from that. You go into corporate America, you learn a ton personally from that. Then you go into this entrepreneurial world. At what point in time in the journey did you discover that this isn't, you know, overgrad's just not something for schools, but is something that unites and connects a student's, you know, support network?
Yeah. So I think, like, from the beginning, we had a theory that if we wanted to see change happen, we had to have schools involved, because there are solutions in this space that will go direct to student. And you tend to see more affluent, aspirational sort of ones that will gravitate toward, and they tend to be seniors, which at that point in time, there's not much you can do on this. If I wanted to solve this preparedness issue, there's not much you could do. So I knew schools were kind of center to our solution from the beginning. And while I knew it was going to be incredibly difficult, and I can't tell you how many times people told me how dumb I was for trying to go the school route, I was very committed to it. But I think, like, what distracted me for a bit is, like, you have so much going on when you start something, and, like, you want to start with a small innovation. And I was trying to tackle so many things at once, me and Kevin with Overgrad. And we took a step back and we're like, who is it that we're trying to help here? And we're like, it's the student, right? And so who supports the student in this process? Like, it's not, they're a huge part of it, probably the most central piece, that student. Their school is a big part of it. Their family is a big part of it. There's community access organizations that are a part of it. Scholarships organizations are a part of it. Like, there's a lot of different pieces that come together. And so how can we, what really became central for us and what we really revolve around and all our decision making is around, is how do we promote student agency throughout this whole process? How do you connect them with the right people, the right resources to help them understand what opportunities are out there and help them realize the opportunities? I think our goal is not just to get kids into college and say, good job, like, pat on the back. And I'm grateful that education is moving this way. There's becoming more and more accountability from K-12 on what are the actual outcomes of the students once they leave. We don't want to just send kids to college and then drop out. That's way worse than never going to college. We also want to make sure college is right for them. There's other opportunities that don't require college. And so understanding all of that, and as we grew as a company and just, like, had that baseline level of understanding, because still only 2 years was not enough to get everything. And I was a teacher. I wasn't a school counselor. And so it was like living that experience that helped me understand that if we want to be successful in our mission and what we're trying to do, that there's more people that need to be involved in this platform. And so how do we do it? We got to support the school, but we got to support the parent, and we got to support the student. But central to that all is the student, and make sure that these folks are getting connected to them very seamlessly throughout the platform.
So let me ask a question then. You know, as you talked about, you didn't necessarily ever imagine yourself as an entrepreneur. You know, you're looking at, you know, big innovations, but then, you know, what are the innovations that can handle? And one of the things education is classically known as is a very slow moving kind of marketplace and entity. It's a difficult, schools in particular can be difficult institutions to break into, you know, in relationships with and business practices with. Like, what have you learned? And maybe this is just a big overall question, because you had mentioned earlier about theory. You know, we had a theory, and that theory adjusted a little bit, but what are you learning about education, like, today and now from these experiences, and then education going forward in this world, and where you fit and moving kids and providing this opportunity for providing the future opportunities for kids to discover?
Yeah. So I will say that the hundreds of people that gave me advice on you're crazy for doing this were right. Like, it is very, very difficult. But it also, I've said this in meetings and, like, in conversations and otherwhere before, like, if you have a solution that solves a true problem, like, you will find customers even within the education space. And I think the problem that we had for a long time is that we had a solution searching for a problem. And it wasn't until we sat down and, you know what, like, you hear these things all the time as an entrepreneur. It's like, talk to your customers. And I'm like, we are talking to our customers. They're just not telling me what I need to hear. It was more like, they're not telling me what I want to hear. And so I went through this, like, accelerator, which I thought was like, we're well beyond this. We don't need it. This more of this, like, coaching and training. And part of it was to have customer discovery conversations. And so in that, I called, like, market leaders that were all using my competitor. And I thought that we're doing great jobs of getting kids to and through college. And I just had a call, not expected to sell them anything. I just wanted to know, What are you doing right now? What's working? What's not working? What are some of your biggest problems that really like drive you crazy? And when I finally stopped talking and started listening, it was like a big breakthrough for us, because I started hearing in their own words what the problems were. And I was like, why have we been ignoring this for so long? This is a couple tweaks to our solution, and this is a product that's solving a real problem. And guess what? Sure enough, when we made those changes and we listened, we started finding a market and started finding customers and growing around that. And I think that's true for any business. I think sometimes people will use the excuse of education is so hard to break through, and like, you know, that's a very bureaucratic system, and you have to know people to get anything done. It's not true. Like, people are in education, I'd say a vast majority, because they genuinely care about the education, the students that they serve, and they know, and they're the ones that are on the ground that understand the problem. And so stop trying to come to them with the solution that you think is best for them, but listen to them, listen to what their problems are, and then develop a solution that actually solves problems that they have. And then you will find customers that kind of come out of that. And so it's taken us a long time. And I also say too, like, you know, we brought this up at the start of the conversation, but you really have to be connected to the problem, because there's so many down days, and there's so many ways. Like, I see people that start companies in education that have never taught or never been in the school systems or whatever, that give up after a year because there's not that like motivation behind why it is, the problems that they've experienced firsthand. And that truthfully has kept me going, along with like a very supportive wife. I'm very grateful for that. But like, the huge breakthrough for us as a company was when we stopped trying to have a solution that was searching for a problem, but found a problem and then had a solution that solved that problem. And that made the market much easier. Not to say that it's easy, but no business is easy. And starting is easy. And so it's just helped us be a lot more focused. And it's great, like, having a feeling of like customers just being like, you're solving real problems for me. And it's like an awesome feeling, both as a company, and just gives us like certainty about like what we're doing has merit and value in the world. So
let me ask that question then, as you, you know, maybe get into, you know, growth, and, you know, as you see growth happen, and as you continue to build, you know, the company and build the opportunities, how do you retain that? You know, how do you make sure you retain a little bit of that innovative edge, you know, that was part of the founding of the company? But then, you know, sometimes I think it is, as companies grow too, they listen less, and then they just push product, right? How do you make sure that in this you keep that balance of the innovation, but then also the listening, but also a little bit of that ambition of moving, you know, moving the marketplace and moving schools and moving educational opportunities forward?
Yeah. So I think like big for me personally, as like the leader of Overgrad, is like stay close to the problem. So I'm always talking to customers. I'm always troubleshooting issues. I mean, it is like time can be, if you want to call like better spent, like doing other things. But I think the best way I can spend my time is being around customers and staying close to it and staying abreast of like what's going on, because what I do and how my actions kind of carry forward will then trickle down to the people that kind of like are working around me to support the same and accomplish the same outcomes. And I think like, you know, servant leadership is a big focus of mine, like as a Christian and using Christ as a model for me. I look at servant leadership as one of the perfect ways, and you'll see like secular world talk about servant leadership as well as such an effective form of leading. And I embody that in kind of what it is that I do. And so if I can continue to kind of keep that philosophy and mentality, I know there'll be forces and strains, but it's getting good at saying no to things and getting good at knowing what's important and where kind of my influence and my sphere of influence is best exercised. And that's going to, that then trickles down, but it's constant reflection. It's never being satisfied with where you're at. I feel like, you know, the big problem in education, there's these behemoths and there's this mentality that there's like complacency that exists. And so you don't see a lot of change in like these big companies that serve huge amount of students within education. And I never want to have that chance of being complacent. This problem is super complex and there's so much more that we can be doing. And we always need to keep that eagerness. Plus it keeps your work fun. Like if you start doing the same thing, you become complacent. That's when you become disengaged and you don't have people that care about the work that you're doing. And I think that's absolutely essential. We spend so much of our days at work, like, have something that you care about while you're working. And so you must never get complacent. And I try to like instill that from my own practice as I move forward.
So let me ask one last question, because on the website, and I've heard you kind of talk about it before, you know, just in phone conversations, is you describe Overgrad as a social enterprise. What does that mean for you, and what does that mean for, you know, a company like Overgrad?
Yeah. So social enterprises are a tricky thing. So I don't like all the negative sort of words that can come with like people like social companies don't make money or like whatever, like social companies just care about like doing good, but not actually having a successful business. Like, no, like you won't be a business if that is your mentality. And I always tell that people too, for like for-profits, nonprofits, I was like, end of the day, you got to pay your bills. And it doesn't matter if you're for-profit or nonprofit. And so for us, just like, it's that like our mission is essential to everything that we do, that we're willing to sacrifice profits to serve the students that we want to serve and have a product that isn't influenced by other areas. Like, for example, and this is a business model in full transparency we tried early on, but like there's a lot of people in this space that make a lot of money by like connecting colleges and universities in not a very clear, not a very transparent way. It's the category is called lead generation. And so for us, it was like, we kind of reflected on like what our mission was as a social impact company. And we were like, does that business model help us achieve what our goals are? No, it doesn't. Then we need to step away from it. It's not to say that we will never go back to it and open it back up, but how can we come at it in a way that supports our mission, supports the student, keeps students central to what it is that we're doing. And so like being willing to kind of always reflect on that and having your mission and sort of, and your goals along that to be socially driven in that sense, but you still need to make money. It doesn't mean like you don't make money. It doesn't mean that you can't be profitable. Like a good business should be both. And I think being a social impact company is tremendous because it's a huge motivator for employees, and it's a great way of getting people passionate about the work that they do.
So Ryan, as we close up, I really appreciate this. So, and I'll connect people with the website, but what are ways for people to connect with you even to learn more about Overgrad and some of the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So as I said, I love being close to the ground. So you can always just shoot me an email. My email is Ryan, R-Y-A-N at overgrad.com. You can also fill out a form on our site if you want more information. A lot of times you'll see me respond back to you versus that form, but would love to reach out, even if it's just from the lens of like, hey, we have this problem. I don't even know if Overgrad solves it, but I want to talk to someone about it. Like, let me know, because I love just hearing from whether they're customers, prospective customers, non-customers, whatever. I'm always trying to learn and understand what the needs are, how the market's evolving, and how we can best serve people in the education space.
Ryan, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it, Eric. Thank you.